I was not aware that I was suffering from mental illness during the time I was doing all these interviews. I was not aware that I was in a stage whereby I had lost sense of reality, sense of peace and calm of myself. I was just furious.
I'm Carol Ofori, and this is the Carol Ofori Podcast for thought-provoking conversations.
Reality TV star and top South African comedian Mongezi Tolas Mo Mahlangu was accused of rape in 2020. And then acquitted of all charges in August 2022. Now, during the two-year-long court case, Tolas Mo lost pretty much everything. He and his wife, Mwome, were forced to relocate from their home in Sandton to a place where they were not recognized. He lost industry gigs, sponsorships, contracts, and all forms of income. Tolas Mo became unemployed and effectively unemployable as a result of this false rape accusation. Now in 2023, Tolas Mo made headlines again when he announced he was divorcing his wife Mwome and said he would never date a black woman again. Now fast forward to 2024 and Tolas Mo is back together with his wife Mwome and has apologized for his comments about black women. In a statement released on his social media, Tolas Mo opened up about how his life was turned upside down as a result of the false rape accusation back in 2020. And the severe mental health crisis he suffered as a result of it. He also thanked his wife for her grace and understanding. And guess what? Fast forward to today. And I'm really, really grateful and excited to have both Tolas Mo and his beautiful wife, Mwome Mahlangu, sitting right here with me on the Carol Ofori Podcast. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
I won't lie, I got the biggest surprise when I saw both of you here. I was only expecting to see you, Mo, and then to see Mwome, I was like, yes, this is perfect.
Mom and I, like, you know, we're best friends and we business partners. So 90% of the time you'll see us rolling together.
Yeah. What a beautiful, beautiful surprise. Well, Mo, let's go back. Mm-hmm. Back to 2020. And this may be uncomfortable for you. And I really want you to be as comfortable as possible throughout this interview. So
Cool. Should
you not want to unpack anything, should you not want to revisit anything, please just say so, we won't go there.
I'm open to talk.
All right.
Yeah.
So back to 2020. Can you take us back to the day you heard that you were now being accused of this heinous crime?
You know, it came as a big shock, you know. It came as a shock. It came as something that really rocked my world. It rocked my mind. It broke me and tore me apart. I was so confused. I was scared. I had so many weird emotions, you know. And I remember it's because my wife that showed me the message. And
a friend texted you.
Yeah, Mome's friend sent her that message, the tweet.
Mm. Wow.
And Mome showed me in the morning and she's like, but what is this? And and the one thing that I really appreciate of my wife is that she immediately saw that, no, this is not true. Because, you know, during the time I was there at the MasterChef, you know, I'd really keep communication with my wife about all my ins and outs of what was happening while we were shooting the show. And going back to that 2020 moment is it's scary, but now I'm in a position whereby I'm healing from it, and I'm getting over that trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is trauma. Mwome, you being the one to first get the news and then having to break it to him, what was that like for you?
To be honest, Carol, for me at first I thought maybe it's someone seeking attention.
Mm.
When you dating in the public eye, you must always be ready for things, you know.
Yeah.
Like I got the message like in the middle of, I slept early and I got this WhatsApp in the middle of the night from an ex-friend actually, and I was like, what nonsense is this? I went back to sleep, you know.
Right.
And then the morning when we woke up, I said to her, hey baby, you know, I got this message. But the thing also for me was, I remember when this person was telling people at that house of their own previous incidents, you know, and because our daughter was only like 3 months when Mo was on MasterChef. So like it was a very intense thing when she spoke about it also to the other participants, you know. It was like a very intense thing. So in my head, I'm a very logical person. Like I just don't place my emotions on everything.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, no, man. It just doesn't make sense, you
right.
know? And also, I said to Mo, you need to figure out what's happening here and sort it out, you know, because I've never seen you as that type of a person.
Right.
And I've never had any feeling towards you being that person, you know? But I guess as time went by, the truth unfolded.
Yeah, the truth unfolded.
Yes.
Wow, that's...
It's quite deep and somber.
Yeah.
And it's so, you know what? Anybody who would be falsely accused of doing any heinous crime would really lose their mind in general, you know, so or even lose their emotional stability, you know. So it was a really a big test in our relationship. It was a massive test in our relationship,
And to see you both on the other side, sitting here together after everything, is really beautiful to see.
Very rocky road, though. Very, very rocky road.
And we're going to go on this ride of this rocky road, right? So your wife breaks this news to you. What are you thinking? Where's your brain at? Are you angry? Are you shocked? Where are you at?
I'm shocked and really, really confused. And I'm wondering and I'm sitting in my head, how did I just wake up one morning and I'm now being accused of being a rapist? You know? So it's like, you know, that just having that word sitting next to my name, it's just like, it's so disgusting, man. It's like, I've got three beautiful daughters, man, that I really want them to, you know, progress and thrive in life. And I teach my son all the time on how to be a gentleman, how to respect and love his sisters and how to treat his mother, you know. And I've always been a public figure that has been a family man, you know. You know, loving and caring for my children. I mean, my kids were born on television. My wife and I were pregnant on television, were engaged on television, we met on television. You know, our life was based on reality. And, you know, to see that whole reality crumble over a false allegation, it really put us in the position whereby we were tested in terms of our love for each other.
Right.
Like, these wedding vows, are they real?
Are they real?
You know, were they for TV? You know, or was it for the hype and the fame?
Yeah.
Or is this really true love? You know? So,
how soon after that was there the first moment where you realized, okay, things are different now? You know, was there friends calls? Was
on
it
from the day that tweet dropped, everything became different.
Well, what was the first thing you noticed?
I was getting phone calls left, right, and center from my brands, from my sponsors, from my bosses in the television, broadcasters and stuff like that. And they were all like saying, what is this, Mo? You know, but all their sentiments when they were talking to me, like, you know, they were, I wouldn't say they were impartial, but I would say that they were, publicly they had to be impartial, but at the same time, they knew, they know who I am, they know my character. And they were like, yo, we're going to have to quiet down on your things while you sort this issue out. And once it's sorted, please just know that we'll always be here, you know, and would be ready to kind of like work with you again. And the first 72 hours was hell. And at the same time, does this happened in Women's Month. I was affected by all the enraged women on social media, you know. And what really pained me was that, you know, sometimes social media is so heartless, they don't even give you the benefit of the doubt, you know.
They make conclusion that's
you know. I was dragged through kangaroo court, you know, of the social media streets, and I was proclaimed to be guilty, you know. But then it's so crazy that I was proclaimed to be guilty on social media, even though it was baseless. There was nothing they could say that, yes, he could have done this. There was not once where Mom and I have had an issue in our relationship in terms of infidelity.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I've been married with my wife for 14 years. I also appreciate the people who also stood up and said, this can't be true.
Right.
I mean, we know this man, like, we can see his character, you know. But the only way I could ever redeem myself, improve myself, was to go through the justice system.
And you did.
Yeah.
Mome, for you as a wife, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, we think if our husbands are accused of things, from the outside, it's always easy to be like, I will distance myself, because you yourself are your own brand, right? Outside of being, you know, Tolas Mo's wife, you are your own brand. And I just want to talk about how you process this, because you didn't say much, but I think your quiet diplomacy, if I can say that, showed us you were standing by your husband. And I think part of you not saying much also, it allowed you to evade a lot of the drama they would have come with, whatever you would have said, whether you said you're for or against, you would have found yourself in a mess. How did you process how you were going to deal with this thing? First of all, as his wife, your own brand, and then you've got kids.
At that time especially, I think we had just completed the first season of our family reality show with the kids.
The
first new season, actually. And a lot was happening, you know, quite a lot of endorsements at the time. And for me, first, in my relationship with Mo, I think we are best of friends first before mm-hmm. we are husband and wife.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And we've never sat down and discussed how to be a husband or a wife. Mm-hmm. You know, we've built everything and maneuvered through loving each other, you know, right. and standing by each other and supporting each other, you know. And another thing is the truth and honesty that we have instilled amongst each other, you yeah. know. There's certain things that I can hear, and considering that we're in the public eye, there's certain things that I can hear from out there, and I don't feel the need to sit down and make it an issue between us, but instead make it a reality and find a way forward and how we sort it out. I remember saying to Mo in 2020, I said, this is going to take 5 years. So I'm going to need you to be strong for the next 5 years. Wow. Because what's going to happen is the back and forth and our names constantly in the media, back and forth, you know, and there's going to be a lot of emotional turmoil. There's going to be a lot, but give it 5 years. I'm telling you, the fifth year will be the year where you say it's done now. And I think for him, he was more worried of how we're going to get through that, you know. And I was like, I'm a very prayerful person, and I don't doubt my faith in God, you know. There's nothing that can make me, no matter how big the storm, you know.
Yeah.
And I understand the meaning of being still, you know, and having faith, you know.
Right.
And I don't shy away from my needs. I don't shy away from my truth, even when I speak to God. Mm-hmm. So what happens in this planet should not make a lot of noise in my head, you know, because I don't want to be drained by things that don't have purpose in my life.
With the kids, how did you manage to, like, you know?
And also with the kids, they don't have, I mean, we mean Kumo and Teyamo because they're the youngest ones,
yeah,
you know, they don't
the babies,
have access to social media like that. And I had to make sure that they don't even find out about this thing themselves in a way, you know, especially Kumo. And she then actually, I don't know what she was talking about with her dad. And when she found out, she came to me and she said, Ma, you know, I think that woman has got problems. The only thing we can do is pray for her, because I know my dad, you know. And for me to see that she understands what's happening, you know, at that age, it was also kind of easy to be like,
to be more open,
yeah, to be more open, you know, like even when we would go to the case, like when Mo would go attend the court case, whatnot, you know, we'd pray together, you know, and would always say that, you know, God is with him, and for most importantly for his family, he's gonna have to go through this battle, you know, for his manhood, he's gonna have to prove himself, you know, and go through it. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah. A lot of people who go through like these kinds of traumas always ask themselves, why me?
Yeah.
I'm sure you asked yourself that.
Yes.
And did you give yourself an answer? Are you at peace with whatever the reason it may be? You know, we sit and we say, why did this have to happen to me? Why me? Out of all the people in the entertainment industry that probably do this and have never been caught. Why me, the innocent guy?
I think that it happened to me because God knew that I'm strong enough to handle it and be able to help other men who are in such a situation. There's so many men out there, Sissy, that are being falsely accused of rape every single day. I mean, rape is a very big problem in our country. I mean, we've got such crazy stats, man. You know, what's happening to our young girls and kids, you know, the GBV, the violence and stuff like that. I'm completely against it. But, you know, there's those cases whereby people do use, you know, such things, you know, for their own benefit, you know. And what's crazy was Mike Ballhase reached out to me, and when we spoke, he was telling me how he believes in my character, and he, you know, he stands by me, and he wants to help me to prove my innocence and to to make sure that, you know, people that use this rape thing for the sake of money, for the sake of fame, for the sake of, you know, whatever it is that they believe they benefit from it, that it's exposed and people know how to deal with these things, you know, because a lot of people are being extorted out there, you know. They don't understand how to get themselves out of it. So I was placed in a position whereby at least now I'm able to help those men, because Mike and I teamed up together when we formed a foundation to kind of also raise funds and help other men who are really in that situation, because Mike knows how to do investigations. He's a special investigator. I don't know if you know who he is.
No, yeah.
Mike Bolles, he's got his own investigative journalist television show on KickNet. Okay. So he's one of those guys that, you know, is a staunch South African policeman, believes in the truth, does not take any nonsense type vibe, you know. Right. And he put me through vigorous amounts of tests, lie detector tests and so forth, you know, before he could even stand with me and represent me and say, but this man is what he says he is, you know.
So was he also behind helping you financially with the lawyers and stuff?
No.
This is after
uh-huh. Now okay, you know what I'm right. saying this is
now,
after.
Now how did you cope with that? I know court is not cheap. Indeed. At that point you had no endorsements, no one was working with you, no one wanted to touch your brand. How did you survive financially to get to a point that you were acquitted? Because a lot of men who would be falsely accused would fall away at the wayside because the lawyers get expensive.
True. With me, I was so blessed to have such an amazing team on my side. My lawyer, Marius, and his team were so supportive.
Yeah.
And Marius was like, you know, one of those attorneys that believes in true justice, you know. And he kind of was understanding with, you know, the costs, implications and stuff like that. I had a bit of money saved up and stuff like that, you know, because I was working. But then it reached a point whereby it dried out. And luckily, you know, I was in such a strong position to win this case. And Morris felt like, you know, he has to do this thing, you know. It's not about the money. So it changed to like a pro rata type situation. And he's like, I'm going to go ahead and finish this case with you, you know. And after we managed to prove my innocence in court, we opened up a civil case against the state attorney, the NPA, the SAPS and the justice system. So
right,
that's what it is.
All right, let's get to the moment now where you get the news. You get into court, the verdict is reached, you are acquitted.
Yes. I was not even just acquitted, I was vindicated, I was proven completely innocent in the court of law.
Yes.
And it was found that this Lerato Moloi lied about the entire incident.
Yes.
You know, in court you can present alibis, you know what I'm saying? And my alibis were not just word of mouth, but just physical proof, flights, travel logins, social media posts and so forth that proved that, you know, this man was not even there.
Right.
Whether it was 30 days before or 30 days after the incident, the date that she believes, you understand what I'm saying.
I got you.
So this thing kind of led me to a position whereby I was scared to be around women.
Yeah. I remember you saying that in one of your interviews, and it led, I assume, to your reaction about black women, right?
It became much more scarier and much more scary and much more traumatizing. You know, the social media, the tweets, you know, people attacking me and stuff like that. It really put me against the wall. And I was like, you know, maybe I should stay away from women or black women completely,
right.
You know. And it was wrong of me to say that, because the specific person who's the problem here is this person, is Lerato, you know.
And that person. Has there been consequences for that person for what they have done?
Do you know what? We're actually still fighting for that person to suffer the consequences, or to actually for justice to prevail, you know? Lerato Moloi is still walking free. She's still enjoying the privileges of whatever it is that she is. And
what consequences would you like to see for her?
I'd like to see her go to jail. She has to go to jail. Definitely. With the charges that she, the false charges that she had laid against me, I was going to get 35 years to life, you know? And it really scared me so much when they're reading the verdict, because they tell you what the sentence is for such a heinous crime. And what I love so much is that the judge, the magistrate, was a female. And she even apologized to say that, you know, we're so sorry, but the justice system even put you through such a thing, you know?
So where are you at now? You mentioned suing the justice system.
Yes.
You're also trying to get her in prison, Lerato Moloi in prison.
That's
for
correct.
The false allegations.
That's correct.
Where's everything sitting now?
What we're busy dealing with now is the civil case against the NPA, the state attorney, and the justice system and SAPS. Yeah, so the finalization of that matter should be happening within the next couple of weeks. Then I can continue and maybe and say I'm now opening a case, you know, of
so you haven't
perjury
opened a case
not yet, okay. No, of perjury, of defamation of character, of all these things, all these types of abuses that were
right.
You know, held against me, basically.
Just dealing with one matter at a time,
yeah, you one know, so I don't want to have one everything on top of me.
I've only been to court once,
yeah,
and I went to court fighting a neighbor about neighborly behavior.
Oh, yeah,
it was the most exhausting 2 weeks of my life.
Yes.
Then I sat in a podcast with Nkosana Makate, who's taken Vodacom, and he's been in court for over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. 10 years.
And then I listened to you, and this journey started 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in court for five years. It's the fifth year now.
Right?
Yeah.
Doing where this. Are you finding the strength for this? Because legal battles are financially taxing, mentally taxing, emotionally taxing, and you could be having a great day and then you just think about the fact that you have
spoiled.
And it spoils your day. How are you getting through your days?
First and foremost, my wife, her support, the prayers of my family, my mother-in-law, and at the same time also, you know, being at peace with my spirituality, that really has helped me a lot, you know, getting in touch with who I really am. You know, getting in touch with my, you know, with my spirituality in terms of my culture, you know, understanding who I am, where I come from, you know, and also going to church a lot is like, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah. From the beginning, 2020, you had this happen, and then over time you'd be on platforms, radio, TV, and there were a lot of very nasty things you've said about people in the industry as you've been going through these trials, right? And also about black women, which we've spoken about, which you've retracted. Is there one person you feel, I really went hard there and they didn't deserve that? I was just...
Yo, if there's one person, I would definitely say Lerato Khanyago. You know, she DM'd me.
Yeah.
And she was like, Mo, I know you hate us black women, but this is my story. Wada, 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 wada.
Right.
And I replied to her with, out of anger, you know, and out of disappointment and stuff. And I was like, you know, I didn't say I hate black women. I said I am traumatized by it,
right?
By them, you know.
Yeah.
And that's wrong, because the trauma I experienced with one person, it's almost like, you know, when you get robbed by a guy who's wearing All Stars, you can have a trauma of anybody who wears a Chuck Taylor. You understand? Every time you see a Chuck Taylor, you're like, I'm going to get robbed.
Right.
You know, so for me, my trauma was weird, because it's based on being afraid of having interaction with females completely, that I even felt like I don't even want to be in my marriage.
I think a lot of people can relate to that, because there are people who will be robbed by a black person.
Yeah.
And will hate black people, or people will be attacked by an Indian person.
Correct.
And will hate Indian people because the attribution is to that person. So I get that.
Yeah,
I get that, and I can understand the trauma of it, but I can also understand you accepting that it's not a reality for the majority of that grouping of people.
But the one thing that I really apologize for is that, you know, I was not aware that I was suffering from mental illness during the time I was doing all these interviews. You know, I was not aware that I was in a stage whereby I had lost sense of reality, sense of peace and calm of myself. I was just furious.
Yeah.
And it kind of was taken aback, it was taken wrong, like, you know, especially on my Showmax interview as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was so furious, because I'm like explaining my life and people are chit-chattering in the back. So I just felt like, you know, it's still people that are gossiping about me, because I'm, you know.
Yeah, you're in your head about a lot of things.
Yeah, you know.
Now, you're saying that you were suffering mental illness. Were you diagnosed by a doctor this? And how are you now? How is your health?
I'm healing
now.
I'm healing. I'm so much better.
Did you have to watch yourself on TV and be like...
I was so shocked when I saw that interview. That is not me.
Yeah. The one with Themba Kile, ne?
Yes. I could feel my pain. I could feel my pain and my anger. But then I could see, Guti, you know what? There was no change. I was unhinged.
Mm.
I was completely broken down and unhinged, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that it's important for us men to be okay to be vulnerable sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and to be open up with your feelings. You know, a lot of guys play tough in the game, and you just see someone committed suicide, you know, because that person has been playing tough, has been playing this superhero character that I don't feel any pain, like I don't have a conscience, like, you know.
And pain obviously triggered by this traumatic experience.
Yes.
I think people don't understand or comprehend how much your life is destroyed by such a false allegation.
Yes.
You've come out on top in the sense that you've been able to heal yourself. Your marriage didn't break. You are finding your feet. You are healing. But others may have taken a very dead end path for themselves.
True.
Yeah.
I was very much suicidal.
Yeah.
I was very much suicidal.
When you say you are very much suicidal, where were you mentally in that space?
You
you suicidal in the sense that I want my life to end, or you attempted to do things to yourself?
Both. You know, when you are in a suicidal mind state, even like the small actions that you do, like talking to yourself, you speaking of ending yourself all the time, You know what I'm saying? Like, this can't go on any longer. Like, you know what I'm saying? Rather this end and then continue without me. If you want to continue talking about me, if you want to continue trying to make me a villain or whatever, then let me leave, you know? And you guys can stay and do that. And at the same time, it's like, it's a social pressure that you can't provide for your family. You're not the same guy that you used to be. You're no longer where people are. You know, you see all your friends gathering and hooking up and doing great things, and you are not there. You see big lineups, big events with all your friends and all your colleagues that are doing stand-up comedy, whatever, and you are not there. You know, those kind of things really work on you and they drive you.
Yeah. I remember, and I've told you this before in previous interviews, the first time I ever saw you was at the Soweto Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah.
It was, the theater had just opened in Soweto.
Yes.
And you were performing there.
Yeah.
And Eugene Khoza was the, I think Eugene Khoza was the MC that day.
Yes, it was run by Eugene Khoza and Kiriboni Mulaudzi.
There we go. And it was yourself, and you were very, very close with Skumba.
Yes.
That we even had interviews and stuff. And I remember there was an interview where you didn't say very nice things about Skumba.
Mm-hmm.
Is that relationship still broken, or are you guys on amend?
I think we're definitely on a path to amend.
Okay.
It's just that, you know, other things, you know, they take time, you know. Other people heal differently. I'll never force myself on anyone, but I've always expressed my sincerity and to be like, you know, actually do not understand that I was not okay mentally. Like, that's why people need to understand what mental health is, you know. And I said all those things out of a place whereby I felt like I'm owed the world. Like, whatever I did for everybody, I deserve the same back, you know. But then, but God says that, you know, when you give, you know, you must give wholeheartedly, you know. Don't give with expectation. And that's the hard lesson I had to learn for myself, because I had this expectation that was, like, you know, unsaid in the back of my mind, thinking that one day if I crumble, those guys that I was with or whatever, my boys or whatever, my colleagues are also going to be there to lift me up. But at the same time, I have to be cautious, you know, because they also have their own lives. They've got their own careers. Being associated with a person who had that kind of thing lingering around their name was not a good thing on anyone's brand.
Right.
You know, so I also have to be understanding towards their fears as well.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Anyone you think you owe an apology?
I owe a lot of people apologies. Lato Khanyago, you know, I really sincerely apologize to the sister. You know, even when she was starting out, you know, Soweto TV, she used to interview me. You know, she's mother, man. She's such a great lady. She's such an amazing woman. And I think that she DM'd me and she messaged me because she was worried about me. You know, she wasn't saying it in a sense, or, you know, like she's being mean or whatever, or trying to poke at me or whatever, or trying to judge me or call me a rapist or whatever. She was not there at all. You know, she was really reaching out in the sense, or, you know, she cares. She's also a concerned black woman who feels like, you know, Mo, we've wronged you, girl. How have we wronged you as black women? Talk to me.
Right.
You know, that's what she was trying to say to me, and I took it a completely different way.
Yeah.
You know,
anybody and then, else stand out for you?
Another person that stands out for me would be Skumba. I mean, we brothers, man. We grew up in this comedy game together. We inspired each other to do so much, you know, so much material. Like, coming from Etembisa, both of us, and him and I being chased out of taverns with, like, knives and bricks and stuff like that because we made fun of people. And Skumba was a cop and they still didn't care. They still chased him. You know?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when the stage lights blind your eyes, you kind of lose track of yourself.
Yeah.
So that's one person that definitely, I believe, it deserves my apology, you know, is Kumba. And my brother and Pop Pops.
Yeah, you went in on him too.
I went in all the people that I'm close with.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm doing like an industry attack. These are all my brothers. These are people I know from close to 20 years doing stand-up comedy together.
Yeah.
But Pops is so crazy because, you know, him and I are like, yeah, Martin Lawrence and Will Smith.
Yeah,
bad boys for life. We were bad boys for life. I knew if, like, you know, if there's anyone that I can vouch is funny, you know, close, like, next to me, or who can out-funny me, or we can go for it head-to-head, would be in Pop Pops. You know, that's why I always loved and respected him so much, you know?
Yeah.
And he tried to reach out to me as well, and I just, like, I was rejecting everyone. I just rejected him, you know? I rejected his handout, you know? Somizi as well, you know, he was such a great person to me. I mean, his mom loved me to bits, bro. Yeah. Like, you know, I was so cool with his mom and Lillian, and Mom Lillian Dube. Like, those are my mamas, you know? I've never had any problems with Somizi. You know, it's just that, you know, sometimes we can take advice differently. My mental state was not in the right frame of mind for me to understand the kind of advice he was trying to give me.
Right.
Him saying to me, no, don't go on interviews and podcasts at that point in time was actually him trying to save me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you were not in the right frame.
I was not in the right frame. You know? Then yeah. What did I end up doing? I felt like I'm being held back. People need to know my truth. I'm innocent and I'm not going down as a rapist. There's no way. And I just went out there in the wrong way and I was just bashing walls and I was fighting and I was like, you know what, I'm going to fight for my innocence because I need to support my family. I need to keep myself going. I love what I do, you know.
Yeah.
I really, really, you know, also humbly apologize to him, you know, big time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Somebody else coming.
Oh, down. My God. PH, DJ PH. He was a very good friend of mine. Him and I were travel buddies. I used to do music as well. So
yeah.
PH and I had a song together. We'd do different music projects. And, you know, his DJ career was kicking off and we became friends. And we just had a fallout, man, you know?
Yeah.
Like a big time fallout, you know? Because of that, you know? Mm. You don't understand. I think that if there's anyone out there who can relate with this thing,
yeah.
You know, maybe they can tell me, because
I think when you've been unpacking it here, one can understand how your life can spiral. And I want to throw it back now to you, yeah. Mome. The moment he's on this platform and then you hear all these things and the next thing it's in the media that he's leaving his marriage. He doesn't want to be with you anymore. Mm. How did you manage that as a wife? And where did you hear it? Did he tell you first or did you hear it in the media first?
Even today, he's never told me that, but he's told the world.
And how did you handle that when you saw the headlines, you saw the news?
No, remember, hence I was saying to you, I told Mo this thing is going to take 5 years because I knew, I work in wellness, you know, and I know how bad stress can be to a person, you know, and all I knew is that he needs support, you know, and I need to understand one thing. It's not about me. It's about what he's going through and my role.
I felt
role.
Like I was not getting any support. That's driving me crazy as well. But yeah. I understand why people couldn't support me on such a notion. You understand?
He needs support. And because I understood, I thought to myself, I'm happy that he left me in peace in the house. And he moved to Upper Clue House. So he's alone there. He's making noise to himself. He's doing all these things to himself while at the same time he's going through this pain, you know?
Were you ever fearful?
And I was so fearful. The only thing I could do was pray for him day and night that he will heal and one day he'll come home. I just kept my faith, you know? And when I'm sitting there alone at home and the kids are going to school, and someone is sending me this podcast promo, I'm getting calls from people who don't even know my new home that I've been in for 4 years. You know, people I haven't spoken to in so long, you know. And I did not talk to anybody.
Right.
You know. And I said to myself, God, the only thing I pray for is for him to come back home alive. Because I did at some point say, one day you're going to hit a breakdown because you don't want to talk about this thing and how it's making you feel, you know. And thinking about it every day, you'll reach a point where there's only air in your brain and you can't think anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And gradually it was happening, you know. So when I heard all these things and people screaming and talking that he doesn't want black women. Oh, he's divorcing. And I was just, guys, Mo's not well. Hey, he's going to be okay. You know, and my family, everyone is just so frustrated. And I just kept my calm. And I said to myself, the only thing I can do is pray for him. One day he will be okay. But at the same time, I'm like, I've been telling people how these social media toxic Twitter things affect people emotionally and mentally. So when that interview came out, I said, you know, God always chooses his strongest vessels. You know, I said, Mo will overcome this because at some point it has to show what happens to these men because most of them, they take their lives.
Yeah, that's really what happens.
They take their lives. You know, they don't even live through the years to prove their innocence.
Yeah.
You know, and I said to him, after everything that you've worked so hard for, the last thing you want is to die a loser. You know, and as hard as it is right now, you're going to have to tell yourself every day that you are going to live. The rest will fall back in place. You will live, you'll go through this, then you'll need time for your healing. So through these 5 years, these things will happen. The only thing you need is to make sure you live.
The wanting to live was, you know, like, you can't be asking yourself if you want to live. Like, you know, sometimes when you'd wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, damn, I'm awake. I'm alive. Like, you know, sometimes you feel like you can just sleep and never wake up. And now I've reached this place whereby, like, it's like I'm finding myself again.
Yeah.
I'm finding myself again. I'm ready to go back on stage. I'm ready to do what I really love.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that drives me crazy as well is that I'm not doing what I love. I'm not working.
That leads me to my next question. Where are you professionally? What's happening? And why haven't you gone out and done what you love?
Do you know what?
The healing time as well.
I think that it was also me just wanting to find healing, because sometimes I still get that social anxiety of wanting to go out, you know?
Mm.
But right now, I think that it's something that I need to overcome. So that's why I'm open and available to take bookings. I've been doing one or two gigs here and there, coming back, doing some comedy shows, really building up, you know. But since that whole mental breakdown that I went through, you know, things quieted down, because I can understand why. But right now I'm in a position whereby I want to regain confidence with, firstly, my fans. I want to rebuild my confidence with my colleagues, you know, rebuild confidence with the brands that want to work with me, the broadcasters that want to work with me. You know, my wife and my kids will always be my anchor. They come first before anything and everything. I think that South Africa can learn a big lesson from what I went through.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to be more kinder as a country to people on social media. For the fact that we even, like, feared around the world as, like, the meanest people on social media, it should say something.
Yeah.
So it's not something that we should be proud of. You know, I think that energy can be converted into much more greater things. South Africans can be heard around the world on social media for more positive things rather than being the most villainous and the most dangerous commenters on social media.
What do you think about cancel culture?
Cancel culture, I believe, is slow poison. If you want to kill someone, give them some cancel culture.
Mm.
It's a nice way of killing someone publicly.
Oof.
Is cancel culture. He without sin, you know. That's what it is, you know. So we must not really forget at the end of the day, we're all human beings. People make mistakes. And when you make a mistake, it's all about dusting yourself up. If there's amends to be made, make amends. If there's consequences to be suffered, suffer the consequences. But move on and pick yourself up.
Where are you guys as a family now? You're on the other side.
Yeah, we're living that farm life.
Yeah. You left Santi in the farm life.
Okay, on to Darby Plaza.
Darby Plaza.
Yeah, on to Leicester, Jamie and Corlea. Unforgivable. Into this and the star.
How are you guys doing as a family? How are the kids? Where are you at mentally? How are you guys doing as a family?
You know, I also believe because of where we are, the kids were not exposed to the whole social media dilemma and whatever, because they're not even on social media, you know, and they go to a small farm school, you know, and they don't even have DSTV, you know, so they're living life on the ground, literally, you know, and games now and then, you know. But more than anything, I think they're just happy to see their dad in a good place.
And that dad is back home.
And that dad is back home. And that life is gone back to normal. When we leave them somewhere, they'll be calling, please pick us up. I'm not going to this family. Can't we just leave each other somewhere for a week?
Yeah.
And then we'll see each other after
a week. We don't need any more separation in our family.
It's like now they don't want. We all going together everywhere we go. So
with me, what I also want to say is that we're in such a great space with our kids, and them seeing us going through those challenges and being back together again and making things work in front of their eyes in their lifetime, I think it would be something that they'll never forget us for, baby, you know?
Mm.
I think that even when they grow up, it would be something that will be their own personal life lessons.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not easy for our kids as well, being born in the limelight. They didn't ask for this. They didn't choose this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that us really keeping our faith in God and sticking together as a family is the best example we can ever give to our kids.
I mean, speaking
that's where we are right now with them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And speaking of family, I mean, I remember the first time I was first introduced to yourselves was Vuzu. You guys had that show, Cream Cartel.
Cream Cartel,
And the two of you on the show, you guys pretty much opened the gate for reality TV in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Kim Cattell, then I did Mo Love with Mo.
There we go, straight after that. Yes. Because South Africa fell in love with you guys and Kim Cattell. You were the very interesting, you know, two, and then you got together, then you did Mo Love, then we saw the baby being born and all of that. Yes. And it's been this beautiful, beautiful journey of life. Mm. And one thing that's consistent, Mo, that I've seen that I think has absolutely been the root and the anchor for you has been your incredible wife.
Yeah.
She's been with you pretty much beginning of your career.
True.
And been with you through the darkest of times. Mm-hmm. And is helping you through this process of finding yourself again.
Yeah.
What do you have to say to her that we can listen into? Because we want to hear it. Because, wow.
Oh, man. Oh, my bingy bingy. My sugar love crispy pie. My sugar bingy bingy. You know, I'm the luckiest man alive. I'm so blessed to have you in my life. Sometimes I pinch myself and I question myself as to, do I deserve such love? And if I do, am I strong enough to give it back? You know, because the way you love is like, it's unexplainable. I've never seen anyone give someone unconditional love to a person who's not even like, you know, their own child. You know, yeah. I can only give unconditional love to your children, but we have that for each other. And one thing that you should always know is that your strength will always be a symbol of what a true woman in marriage should be like. You're there even through the tough times. I'm not saying that you should tolerate all the nonsense I do, but you know, I think that you're kind of a symbol to hope, symbol to love, a symbol to my family, to my kids. And I really appreciate you so much from the bottom of my heart. I don't think I would be alive right now if it wasn't for you. You saved my life, and I saved your life, and you saved my life again. So I owe you one. It's 2-1. Okay?
2-1.
Yeah, it's 2-1.
I love that.
I always pray to God that, you know, we stay together and we age together to be like, you know, Romeo and Bussy.
That's too little.
Oh my God, baby. I wasn't thinking about that, man. What the hell?
You were role models.
Yeah, so I really believe that's the type of love that we have. It's just endless. We have so much to look forward to. I'm back. I'm back, baby. And the only way we're going to go from here is to go forward in love, go forward in peace and humility. You know what? No matter what anyone says to you on social media or whatever, baby, just, you know, take it a stride and let's continue moving. You know what you are and you know what you're not.
Yeah.
You know? I love
and
that.
Yeah, you're the most amazing woman I know.
Yeah.
All right. I love you, my caramel cupcake baker.
We're almost at the end of our conversation. And I think a big question is forgiveness. Mm. Have you forgiven Lerato Moloi?
Yes, I have forgiven Lerato Moloi. But I can't say I've forgiven and say but. Mm. I've forgiven Lerato Moloi. The course of law will continue from there.
Have you seen her since this?
I've never seen her since.
And do you know what you would do if you did see her, how you'd feel? Have you prepared yourself for the possibility of bumping in at a supermarket or event or in the crowd whilst you're on stage?
She's going to come and apologize to me one day. Mm. She'll explain to me and tell me why she did this. Until then, like, you know, I'll just be chilled. I'll keep quiet and I'll watch and I'll observe. But one day she'll come up with the truth. She'll have to come up with the truth and tell us as to what led her to do this. What was pressuring her? What did she need? What kind of emotional support or mental support or whatever it is that she needed? What was it? What was the problem? Because people don't just act like that. There's deep-rooted problems behind someone going crazy. Mm. Trust me, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, what's next for both of you?
Our book. Mom's book.
Oh, I love that. Is that going to be about the relationship, life? What is it going to be about?
There's a lot of things in the rumble.
It's called The Depth of Black Love. Mom has already written the book. It's already printed out. It's ready. She just has to publish it.
And you know where to come when you do publish it for your first interview, right?
Definitely.
Okay, I'll do that.
It's a very spicy book. Trust me.
No, it's about black culture and love and marriage. And marriage. And things that every woman can identify, you know.
With in-laws.
I just wrote because I want my daughters to grow understanding certain things they should not just tolerate them because they're married.
Right.
You know, they should have the strength to identify things that are not right, you know, and be able to talk about them. They should be able to address the in-law issues. They should be able to have relationships
right.
peaceful relationships. Like, you know, it's a wellness book and protecting your mental health.
Yeah.
And it's a cry for love at the same time to say that love your makoti. You know, we come here to build. We don't come here to destroy, you know. And identifying those Black community issues, basically. Yeah.
And one last thing that I'd also like to say is that I also would like to apologize to South Africa in general, because they went with me through this entire roller coaster, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I also want to thank everybody that is loving and supportive towards me and understands me. And I also want to say to all the men who are going through what I went through, or who are going through what I'm going through, is that, you know, just be strong. God is there.
But speak and cry.
Yeah, speak.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay to speak, and it's okay to cry.
It's okay to speak, and it's okay to cry.
Yeah.
I love that.
Normalize that as male, then we'll have less, you know?
Yeah, less problems. Yeah.
Less problems. Mohammed, you've seen him go through the most. What do you have to say to him?
I'm very proud that he doesn't have the spirit of giving up. I always tell people, like, I remember when this whole thing was happening, I was telling my Mo, and I'm like, if there's one person I know in this world, there's Mo, like, I know he doesn't have the spirit of giving up. And these things, you know, when you vow to someone through thick and thin, in sickness and health, you don't know when until it happens for you to understand, or, oh, that was the thick and thin. Oh, this is the in sickness and health that is meant. And it doesn't tell you what sickness it will be. And it's a matter of understanding those vows and sticking by them. I also believe that you know your truth and you are not shy about it. And the fact that you are able to acknowledge and take accountability when you are wrong.
Takes time, but
without but eventually you do.
Takes time. Yeah.
Even if it takes time, but I always say just give him time. I know he'll figure it out. That's more I know, you know. And he always does figure it out, and he'll come up and say, actually, what I did was wrong.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank you, my baby.
You know, I'll figure it out. He's that type of a person who's always willing to apologize whenever he knows he's done something wrong and takes accountability. And I really like that.
Thank you, baby.
You know, I think also from all these trials that we've had over the past 14 years, going 15 years now, you've grown so much. It's like, from,
man, when I met you, I didn't even have a beard.
Yeah, because when we met, he had just turned 24. He didn't even have a beard, you know. And when I first saw the first part of the beard, I'm like, dude, you're growing up, hey? Look, you've got one strand here, and suddenly now there's a lot, you know.
Right.
And if you've grown with a person and you've been with them every day of your life like that, in a way that you see them grow, literally, and you know their qualities, you know, like, you know their strengths and their weaknesses, to a point that you're not easily shaken by situations, you know. And it's also from the type of relationship you've built with the person, you know, that secures you from the honesty and being able to be open without the fear of being judged. I think that's another thing that I
got you, babe.
I really like between us, because it gives us that opportunity to always speak of our feelings, because I know he won't judge me. Like, literally, like, we will be taking a dump and brushing our teeth in the toilet.
Oh, Mommy, you're so disgusting, bro. I'll be brushing my teeth, then you come and sit down. There's a difference. It's not like I can come in while you're doing your thing and I just stop brushing my teeth. You're so disgusting, bro.
You can't wait at the door. You can't, like, you know, because no one is going to judge you here. No one is going to judge you.
Well, you know, I'm so thankful to the both of you for coming through.
Thank you.
Mo, for being so open, for going back to a dark place that affected you mentally, emotionally, in every way, and revisiting that. Thank you for being that vulnerable in this podcast. And Mo, for holding his hand and for sharing your journey as a strong wife who's had to carry and literally have her marriage issues for the world to see, and navigate that life and still try and shield young children from this crazy evil world that we have. So thank you for your vulnerability.
Thank you. Oh, please. And another thing is, I want to just say thank you to all the medical staff that was, you know, a part of, you know, bringing me back to where I am. My occupational therapist, my psychologist, my psychiatrist, my therapist, my, everybody, my doctor. You know, big thank you to everybody. Thank you to everybody. And let love prevail. let love prevail. And yes, I am available for bookings.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Tolesmo and Mome.
Thank you so much, Carol.
That's the Carol Ofori podcast. For thought-provoking conversations, listen at ecr.co.za under podcasts or your favorite podcast app.